Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now then, so we have much to discuss. It is a Heineken Champions Cup weekend ahead, very much an Anglo-Irish affair. Also, David Nusafora has been speaking to sections of the Irish media this afternoon, and it's all been published in various formats. We have a novel pairing this evening. Ben Coles of The Telegraph, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us, Ben. It's your job to bring us up to speed on where all the English teams are. We'll come to that in a second. And also we have Darren, still getting used to former Ulster player, Cave, with us. Hello, Darren Cave.
Hi, how are you, Joe?
Very well. So we'll get on to Heineken Champions Cup in just a moment, if you bear with us, Ben, and maybe you might enjoy us navel-gazing and still picking away at the scab of the World Cup 2019. But David Nusafora, the IRFU Performance Director, has been speaking with journalists today. They have conducted a review, the IRFU, into, well, ultimately, I suppose, what went wrong at the World Cup. Darren, I know you've had a quick look at some of the reports. They pinpointed a few things. A failure to develop a style of play, a lack of focus maybe on Japan, or certainly really focusing on Scotland and taking Japan for granted to whatever extent you want to go with. Psychological shortcomings and not performing under pressure. And then the one that always comes up after every World Cup anyway, which is the need to further develop Irish players' skill sets. So I think the first two in particular might be the ones which, I don't know, might irk Joe Schmidt or look the most damning. One, a failure to develop style of play, and two, a lack of focus on Japan. Those are the two that jump out to me.
Yeah, and it is a very, very hard thing to dissect. I mean, you and I have spoken about it before. Ireland have been so disappointing for the majority of 2019, and it is really hard to put your finger on the exact cause for it. One thing I do agree with strongly is that it is a combination of a number of things, because there is a flaw in every argument. Because, the Japan, we didn't play well against Japan, but you rewind the clock, we've been out of form for a while. So, you know, psychologically, did we struggle in 2019 with being close to the best team in the world, if not the best team in the world at times? Perhaps. Our style of play, I do think we struggled to cope with teams that were very physical, and I do think we didn't adapt our style of play, but at the same time, it was still the same style of play that led us to a reasonably convincing victory against the All Blacks. So I don't overly disagree with anything that's been said. I'm happy it's not my job to be trying to sift through the embers.
What David Nusafora said exactly on the style of play situation, I'm sure people are curious. Should we have developed our game further? Potentially, yes. But I say that with the benefit of hindsight. And our coaches have been good at those things for a long period of time. We could have gone down that path, but there was no guarantee that would have got us a better result. It creates a risk. We chose the path of let's stick with what we do and just try and get an extra 10 or 15%. Should we have armed our players with more tools? In hindsight, we should have. But that's easy for me to say sitting here now. It potentially could have really turned to custard for us. It's a learning for us in terms of managing the future. It'd be interesting to know, we never quite will, is that sense of things coming from the players who might have contributed or from Joe Schmidt, who obviously would have contributed as well? It's also not entirely clear.
Well, I haven't looked at the report in depth, but that is something that was of interest to me. It does say it was sort of all done by outside consultants, but I wonder who exactly is giving this feedback. Mm. Not that it's wrong, I said it's just something of note. Because obviously that's a pretty important thing. And I suppose, as I said before, there's a hole in every argument. And I think back to the Scotland game in the World Cup, and granted Scotland had a poor World Cup, but I thought that performance from Ireland and that victory was very typical of where the success that the Irish team have had over the past number of years. Very solid defence, very strong kicking game, putting teams under pressure, and then when they force the game, just really pouncing on that. So it is just such a hard thing to fully dissect. I'm not fully convinced, but I do understand the argument. You know, when Japan were throwing the ball around and New Zealand were doing the same, and we were sticking to our reasonably conservative game plan, which has served us very, very well, we did look average at times.
Yeah. One last point, and we'll finish on this. What he said, David Nusafora, on the Japan situation in particular, was our coaching approach during the time in the lead-in was to focus on the Scotland game and everything focused on it. That was perceived to be the biggest game of the group. He went on to say later on, "We underestimated the level of intensity Japan could produce for 80 minutes. It genuinely surprised us. We feel we got a few things wrong there and feel if we had our time again, we would have been split more between the two teams." Ben, you might give us the outsider view as we leave the World Cup behind, because we have talked about it a lot here, as you might imagine. When you looked at Ireland in 2019, it all just felt a bit flat to us. What were you seeing or thinking?
There was definitely a sense that maybe the peak had already happened a year before. I think as the Six Nations sort of played out and as they built towards Japan, something felt a little off. But in various areas, and I guess as Darren said, when those sort of areas all sort of add up, and you're not quite firing all cylinders in your physicality, in your execution, in your defence, then that turns into a bigger issue. And so I think that was probably quite clear as the year wore on, and certainly by the end of that Six Nations and the Wales game, that things just weren't the same as they were a few months beforehand, and that therefore that's very hard to turn around. And for all the success of 2018, it must be quite a frustrating feeling if your players and coaching staff to realise that perhaps you have peaked too soon and a year out from the World Cup. I think that's going to be one of the things that will certainly stay with those players and with Joe Schmidt too.
Ben, as we segue into the action at the weekend, be interested just to get your thoughts on the status of the actual competition at the moment, the Heineken Champions Cup. It's been notable in the last couple of days or weeks, certainly. Simon Halliday was saying to the Sunday Times, everything is in the mix. And he was talking here about the format of the competition. We've created a roundtable debate going on all year to ask what's wrong with the status quo. Should we look at more teams, fewer teams, home and away quarterfinals? Everything gets thrown on the table. There is probably a sense over here that the tinkering with the competition a couple of years ago didn't really help things, and just took a bit of something away from it, and you know, splitting it between BT Sport and Sky Sports and all these kind of things. I think people probably get equally a little bit unsure when Simon Halliday is talking about looking at the format again. I mean, maybe home and away quarterfinals could be quite exciting, in fairness. What are you hearing? Is this very genuine? Are they going to start tinkering with the format again?
You'd sort of be surprised if they were thinking down that line, given we're still feels like we're bedding in to a new format that we're trying to get accustomed to that process. And home and away quarterfinals, it does sound interesting to a point, until you think that today we're celebrating in a way the fact that the Lions tour is two less games, but over the same period of time, and how good that is for player welfare. Mm. So to then add in an extra element to the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup would seem to work against that. I think when we decided to trim the competition down to the 20 teams, the whole idea was that would breed more of an elite tournament. And I think we do have that. I think we do see tougher contests and tighter games and less mismatches. And that's really what everybody wanted in the first place. So I'd be surprised. The idea that everything is in the mix is fairly eyebrow-raising, because it's still quite a young tournament in this format, really.
Mm. The other thing, if we stay with the format conversation for one other question, is what might happen in terms of a British-Irish league. So there's been talk about this as well, given that CVC Capital Partners are obviously invested in the Premiership now and also the Pro 14 as well. There has been talk of some kind of amalgamation over the last couple of days. The 14 English clubs and the 10 sides from Ireland, Scotland, Wales from 2022 onwards. Now, I think Irish provinces would jump at that, to be honest. The Scottish provinces, you know, Glasgow in decline, the Welsh region's in crisis, Italy like doing what they can, but really the Pro 14 lacks a bit of competition, frankly. The English clubs, would they look at this and run a mile, or what's the sense over there?
I think the sense has always been that the English game and the English league is a very strong product in its own right, and that therefore there isn't as much of a need to sort of merge with teams from other countries, because the league has consistently developed and produced an entertaining product over the years, whether it's been the battle at the top or the battle to avoid relegation at the bottom. I think actually that relegation battle sort of can get overlooked sometimes. Actually, that's such an exciting element of the season, particularly this season, where everything has been flipped on its head and you have the sides sort of trying to claw their claw their way back from a points deduction in Saracens. We'll get onto them, and they're not going to get relegated. But there's so much intrigue there and storyline there that I think the Premiership Rugby feel they have a very strong product, and that they don't really need to look at merging. I can 100% see why the Welsh regions would want to, and how much of a lifeline that would be to create that sort of product if it was on the table. But I don't think the same enthusiasm is here for that at the moment.
Okay. I didn't expect it to be any other way, to be honest. Let's look at the action at the weekend then. So, Darren, let's start with Ulster, who have Harlequins at Kingspan Stadium, 3:15 on Saturday. This, because of the first 2 weeks, has become such a brilliant opportunity for Ulster. So if Ulster can win these two games, that takes them to a minimum of 16 points. And then they beat Bath at home, and that would get them to 20 very easily and very quickly, and suddenly they'd be in fantastic shape. So they've set themselves up. They have taken, and you were on the pitch, obviously, taken the momentum they might have drawn from an ultimately disappointing day, but a very good performance against Leinster in the quarterfinal last year, and seem to have hit the ground running this year.
Yeah, and the big advantage Ulster have is when the group was done, and you see that there's the two English teams, and obviously that's not something that would normally get you that excited. But just to go back slightly, the reason I think the British and Irish League might appeal to the English teams is because it will make the Champions Cup far more of a level playing field. If you look at Ulster's fixture last week, and this is something I was aware of when I was playing, but the gap now between the Pro 14 and the Premiership has, I think, doubled in the past couple of years. Ulster last week were at home to the Scarlets on a Friday night. The Scarlets had a large number of players playing in an exhibition match the next day against the Barbarians. Mm. You know, Billy Burns didn't play, Jordy Murphy didn't play, Ian Henderson played, Jacob Stock didn't play, Marcel Coetzee went off at halftime. John Cooney went off just after halftime. These are Ulster's best players, and this is our preparation going into this Harlequins game. Now, you look at Harlequins and Bath, sitting 8th and 9th in that table. Suddenly, their focus is starting to move away from this Champions Cup already, because they're in the middle of, scrambling to get back in next year, and most importantly, staying away from relegation. Not only that, Harlequins' tough game against Gloucester on I think it was Sunday. So if you look right across the fixtures in these Champions Cup games and look at who's playing, who's playing who in the previous games, again, to mention Gloucester, they're playing Harlequins on a Sunday. And the Connacht are having pretty much a captain's practice at home to the Southern Kings the week before. So there's not a level playing field. And because of that, Ulster will be very, very confident. Ulster will not fear. They'll think that they can topple Harlequins this week, that Harlequins will sort of make a few changes for next week, start worrying about the Christmas Premiership fixtures because they need results there. Then Bath will come to the Kingspan in January and get absolutely massacred because they'll be in the same mindset. And then we'll go to Claremont and get a losing bonus point. So Ulster will be very, I hope that doesn't sound too bullish, but they will be very confident about the position they're in.
No, it makes sense. I mean, there's a real logic there, and English clubs have made the point in the past, the difference in demands between the Pro 14 and the Premiership. I mean, we can't ignore it. It's interesting you think that has increased, that gap has increased over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because I've left the game and I've noticed it. I also think if you look at the Premiership, you've seen the likes of London Irish come up, and okay, we're only five games into the season, but they're in the top half of the Premiership. Bristol have done what they've done. Worcester have come up and looked pretty settled. So the worst teams in the Premiership are all teams now. I mean, looking at the league table now, the four bottom teams, Bath, Wasps, Leicester and Saracens, I'm pretty sure they've all won a Premiership before. Teams like Sale, who have been weak for the last few years, are up in fifth. And obviously Exeter have done what they've done over the past 10 years. So I just think I don't think the best teams in the English Premiership are any better than the best teams in the Pro 14, but I think the gap between the bottom teams is very, very significant, and the result is the top teams in the Pro 14 have much easier league weeks going into cup games. Also, to concentrate on the Irish provinces, you'd expect all four Irish provinces to finish in the top six and get into the playoffs. So there's no real worry about relegation. Whereas that the English Premiership is just a complete different beast. And as I said, if Harlequins lose this weekend at the Kingspan, they'll be thinking, you know what, let's forget about Europe and let's make sure we look after our meat and drink. Bath are playing back-to-back against Claremont and they'll be thinking the exact same thing. Mm. So it's I feel like the gap's got bigger, definitely.
Right. There is a touch of incentive maybe for Harlequins. Billy Burns is an injury concern. Will Addison is out, obviously, for the next 4 weeks with his suspension. But they are eighth in the Premiership, Ben. What kind of shape do Harlequins pitch up to Belfast in?
I think given a bit of a boost after that win over Gloucester, quite a big boost actually, given the way they've started the season. I think they've won 3 out of the 7 games they've played so far. It's not everything sort of went well last time out, and everyone was on a bit of a high because Paul Gustav came in and made sweeping changes, and they'd needed a jolt really after the end of the John Kingston era, and he delivered that. Second seasons, I always think, are fascinating because you either see certain teams where the ethos of a coach is sort of bedding in and they go to a new level. Thinking Northampton, for example, who are top of the table. Ulster under Dan McFarlane spring to mind as well. Patrice Collazo at Toulon, where teams are improving because they've had extra time with these systems and it's getting better. With Quinns, I just wonder, because they had such a breakout campaign last time, whether they're going to find it a little bit tougher and whether other teams will be a bit smarter to what they're trying to do there. They've still got some outstanding talents there, and Alex Donbrandt in particular, his name is being muttered as one of those post-World Cup additions to England's squad moving forward. And he's obviously a very exciting player that they can build around. So it will be interesting to see sort of how they fare just over the next month. I think we'll sort of find out a lot about them in this December period, because it really will make or break their season, how they fare in Europe and in the league.
Darren, just before we leave Ulster, you might give us a bit of an insight into John Cooney and his personality and how he's managed really just to continue the brilliant form, not least in Europe and on the big occasions. He's like a kind of French number 9 running the game, and Billy Burns seems quite happy for him to do that in places as well. So the way he's really stepped into kind of an impossible vacuum after Ruan Pienaar's departure.
Yeah, he's been playing good rugby for Ulster for a couple of years, as everyone knows. But I do feel like he's raised it a little bit again this year. The way Ulster play, he's incredibly important. Billy Burns hasn't played as much rugby as Ulster would have liked, and as you mentioned, he's an injury duck for this week. If he doesn't play, then his role becomes even bigger because of the strength of his kicking game. And it will be interesting to see from an international point of view. I think, going forward, number 9 is probably Ireland's hottest sort of jersey. If you think through Luke McGrath, Marmion, Jameson Gibson-Parks, Irish now or soon qualifies, Conor Murray and John Cooney. So it is incredibly competitive. But I just feel like there will be, Andy Farrell will put a couple of stamps on this Ireland team. And even though John Cooney, you know, he's slightly older, it's not like he's a young kid. The standard he's been playing to, you know, I certainly think he's one with him the chance of just coming from nowhere from an international point of view over the next few months. And his importance to this Ulster team is absolutely massive.
And tell us about Dan McFarlane, working with him day to day. We spoke briefly before and you made the point that he is a very detail-oriented coach. I mean, broadly speaking, kind of out of the school of Joe Schmidt.
Yeah, so he definitely... you know, being in Ireland camp when Joe's been in charge, because he references certain phrases that Joe would use, and I definitely think he styles his preparation and his coaching on Joe, and he's intelligent enough to know that Joe is the most successful rugby coach in the history of professional rugby in Ireland, so he's a pretty good person to learn from. So he's meticulous in his preparation, in his detail, and he's done a great job at Ulster. I think he's given the team a real identity in terms of how they want to play. They like to win the ball in the air and kick box kick off 9 like all Irish teams do, but at the same time they recognise that if the game is an arm wrestle, that they're going to struggle, so they need to move the ball as well. This year their defence has been particularly strong and we haven't seen the best of their attack. Last week against the Scarlets it was slightly better, So hopefully that is the first step on that journey, and we'll see more of that this weekend.
Yeah, okay. And Jarrod Payne's role there has been talked about as well. He's getting plenty of compliments over the last couple of weeks in particular. If we move to Franklin's Garden then, Chris Boyd, you mentioned second season, Ben. It's in, you know, you drew that parallel. So Chris Boyd, the New Zealander, his second year in charge, and Northampton are flying at the top of the Premiership. Both Northampton and Leinster on 9 points. Dan Biggar got them out of a bit of a hole, Treviso away last day out, and they beat Leon as well. So they're unbeaten this season. And this is just kind of one of those European games that has a bit of history as well and a certain heritage. Leinster's record is very good there, 1-13 and 17, and obviously there's memories of the final in 11. So it's all really nicely set up there. Can you tell us a bit about Chris Boyd, the impression he's making, the kind of rugby he has Northampton playing now in their second season with him?
Yeah, I think maybe the biggest compliment I could pay them is it's a bit like watching the Hurricanes during his title-winning season back in 2016, where the speed of their recycling has been outstanding. They're a very solid defensive team, but so much of the good work that they do is orientated around the line-out and around the attacking game. There's a good reason why Sam Vestey's name has been heavily linked with the England coaching setup over the last couple of weeks, and that's because his work as attack coach there, working with Chris Boyd, has been really impressive. Tekele Nayarivoro has been unplayable the last few weeks in the league, and the fact that you've got him on one wing and then some young talents like Rory Hutchinson and Tom Collins and George Furbank at fullback, these are all young players who Boyd is getting the best out of. It helps that you have an international halfback pairing, and you mentioned Dan Biggar sort of getting the win at Benetton. That was an outstanding bit of kicking under pressure. But also Kovacs Rannick has come back, and it's like he barely left off. He was one of the best players in England last season, and that form has continued really. Boyd himself is an entertaining character. Your classic sort of Kiwi coach wearing shorts in December kind of guy, sort of just gets on with it, no frills. But the work he's done to turn Northampton around, I mean, it's not that long ago that we were watching them in tatters, really, when Jim Mallinder left the club after so many years and everything needed a massive shake-up. And now here we are with them top of the table, admittedly quite early into the season, but they're playing an attacking brand of rugby, and they also have the skills there to shut down games and to win tight matches, I think.
So how difficult will this be for Leinster going there, Ben? How do you see this game going?
Well, it'll be a lot tougher than 17, for example, when those two matches took place. I think it's fair to say that was Northampton's low point, and it's almost night and day compared to where they were then to where they are now. I guess Leinster will look to try and squeeze them in the set piece and to limit that ball out wide that Northampton have been craving this season. But if they do get on the front foot and Rynak is getting quick ruck ball and able to feed his backs, then Matt Proctor's been a great addition at centre as well, who worked with Boyd at the Hurricanes, then they can cause Leinster problems, because they have done it in the league so far this season. They've comfortably beaten the most defenders. Mm. Things like 62 to Bristol's 50, and they've scored 20 tries already, which is 5 better than anybody else. So they're an attacking tour de force at the moment. It's different in the Champions Cup, but they are a threat this time, far more than 2 years ago.
Okay. What about this one then, Darren? Leinster, post-World Cup, have got back to business pretty comfortably and quickly, to be honest.
Definitely looks like the fixture of the round, to be honest with you. Leinster have looked absolutely unstoppable in both competitions so far. I think they're 7 from 7, is it, overall? Mm. They've scored, it might even be more than that, I think they've scored 30-plus points 6-odd times. But Northampton, of the teams I've seen in the Premiership, I've been very, very impressed with them. Actually, big picture in terms of what they're building, they haven't just signed big names and spent big money and broken salary caps. Not that anybody in the Premiership would do that. But they have a lot of young guys coming through, and they've been really, really impressive. And obviously, they're at home as well. So really, really tough one to call. I see them both probably getting out of the group, although Benetton are there on merit and not as a token Italian team. I think they will struggle as the Champions Cup continues. Leon, I could see
you know, them sort of wavering come January time. So I expect these two to come out of the pool. And it's such a hard game to call because I just cannot see how you can beat Leinster if they play well. Mm. But I'm looking forward to seeing them really, really tested against a really impressive Northampton team. So I'm just going to sit on the fence, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Enjoy it there. So that's on Saturday, 1 o'clock. And then I guess maybe competition for tie the round. If Martin McCall keeps his pledge, Ben, to name a strong side, we'll know on midday, sometime around midday on Friday. Munster Saracens, 5:35 on Saturday, under the lights at Thomond. Munster obviously drew their last game at home, so they're on the back foot of touching this pool and need a big result here. And then Saracens rock up, and well, you can tell us the general mood. I mean, the everyone hates us and we don't care vibe, there's an extra layer on that this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, there certainly is. And you know, you can tell that they just love it as well, and that it's just such an easy message to sort of feed into their players and to motivate them every week. This is a fascinating game because obviously if this doesn't go well at Thomond Park, then I sort of think that's it for their campaign, because I think they, from there, they'll just think, is it really worth us putting full resources into the Champions Cup this season when, admittedly, they are going to stay up in the Premiership. I don't think that's beyond doubt. But the way the table is shaping up and the way certain teams are spluttering at the moment, it's not really impossible to suggest that Saracens could win loads of games and end up near the top six and be challenging for that sixth spot. I mean, They are obviously a long way back, but we're only a few rounds into the season and there's so much to play for. And Mark McCall has to manage his England players. So say they do lose at Munster, he's not going to want to use those players in matches in Champions Cup matches when qualification is tricky, when he can potentially save them.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. I think they love weeks like this. They will love the challenge of going over there. They will love the challenge of facing Munster. They'll love the fact that everybody's sort of against them. That it will be an interesting, tasty atmosphere. I think that will tick all their boxes. And they've tended to thrive in those games. Mm. When the big lads are back for the Bath game on Friday, Farrell, both Vinopolas this time, Mario Togie, they look back to that mechanical best where they just suck in defences and and create overlaps and spaces and score tries and keep the scoreboard ticking. And they can be so ruthless when they play like that.
Yeah, and Darren, they're damn hard to break down as well. I mean, the defence is just so mean and there's no space. And Munster and Stephen Larkham, it'll be a real test of their mettle and see how much work they've managed to do. And Munster, as I mentioned, are on the back foot a little bit in this pool after dropping points at home last day out. So Munster against Saracens. Like, Saris have beaten them very comfortably on the last three occasions.
Yeah, and you never ever write Saracens off. And I would definitely agree with Ben. They seem to have a real siege mentality there. I think all good sports teams do, but them in particular, the more you write them off, the more you hate them, the more you think, and the more you call them cheaters and tell them their medals should be taken off them, it just builds something. And I was unfortunate to play against them four times in Europe and lost all four. And I used to hate playing against them, absolutely hate it. So never, ever write them off. Mm. And I am fascinated by them this year because, again, I agree with Ben. I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up in the top six. I think there's absolutely no chance they will get relegated. I think when you've set the bar to them to go and get, you know, a gross sort of 80 points, they are capable of going and getting it. Now, obviously, you take into consideration a lot of their players are off the back of a hugely draining and successful World Cup, and they're going to have to go again for a Six Nations. It will be tough, but they are capable. Mm. Munster, yeah, Thomond Park in Europe, you don't write them off either, so I'm still on the fence.
Oh, you're still there. Joe. Good. Yeah, OK. Don't move off it. Yeah. Stay on it.
You never will.
What made it so miserable playing against Saracens on those occasions, Darren?
Just how sort of stingy a team they were, and the energy with which they used to get off the line in defence and chase kicks, and it really is smothering. When I was playing, I loved teams that used the classic sort of drift defence. They give you time, try to push you towards the sideline, and the way I played, I just used to love when teams said, look, give you time on the ball. And the more time I had, the more likely I was to make a good decision and the more comfortable I felt. And the more, you know, stages in my career, I was able to get the ball into the likes of Tommy Bowe and Andrew Trimble's hands with time and in space. And when you're against Saracens, it's a complete different gravy. It was 80 minutes of an absolute war of people sprinting at you. And they give you absolutely nothing. And then they punish you when you make any mistake. So, it's, as I said, it's going to be a cracking game. But I'm actually going to slide off the fence and I'm going to back Munster.
Okay. Just by dint of Thomond and heritage and tradition and all those kind of things.
Exactly, exactly. And I have to, I can't come on here and you know, and not back back the fellow Irish team. So I'm going to back Munster.
You can do what you want. We're talking here with Ben Coles of The Telegraph and Darren Cave. Just very finally then, Connacht in Kingsholm. So Connacht was started reasonably well. They won at home against Montpellier, which was a huge win, and then they lost in Toulouse. People might remember, Munster fans in particular might remember last year, Gloucester came to Thomond, and that was the day Danny Cipriani was sent off, slightly unlucky, but under the new rules he had to go. And then Joey Carberry put in a bit of a masterclass in Kingsholm. Connacht don't have a great record against Gloucester. What's going to happen here, Ben?
Well, Gloucester are in a bit of a funny place because they've lost their last five in a row. And having started the season well, you sort of wonder when they're going to snap out of this losing streak. It looked as though when they went ahead at Harlequins last weekend that that might be it, especially with the fact that Frank Mostert is back. And I think they're just facing a couple of issues across different areas. And one has been the scrum. The scrum hasn't been that outstanding this season. There's been some issues there. Slightly better against Harlequins, but they're not quite firing up front. And obviously, that's always a worry when you're going on the road, especially to Ireland in the Champions Cup. It's not a massive surprise to see that they've been linked with someone like Carl Sinker on a big money contract because they do lack a world-class tight head and he would fit the bill. And also leadership. I think they're really missing Willie Hines with the injury that he picked up during the World Cup. I think they're just lacking that direction. Danny Cipriani is not quite firing as well as he was. So there's little elements like that where they were sort of the critics' favourite team last year in the Premiership because they were doing so many things well and they were upsetting the established order a little bit and playing exciting rugby. This season, something's just not quite there yet. So, which makes going over to Connacht very tough because yeah. The sports ground's a merciless place to go if you're slightly off your game and your confidence is wavering.
Yeah, okay. And Connacht are playing well, so they might fancy that. Right, that has been our rugby coverage with thanks to Vodafone, hashtag team of us, everyone in. So just to round things off, Ben and Darren, just give me your predictions. So back to Thomond. Darren, you went Munster. What are you saying, Ben, for Thomond Park?
It's a tough one. I would probably go with Munster as well. For this one.
Okay. Then Ulster, are you going for Ulster at Kingspan? I presume you are, Darren.
Yep, have to.
Okay. Ben?
Yes, I think so as well.
Okay. Leinster, Northampton, Ben?
I think Saints will win that one. I think it would be a massive win for them. Yeah, a bit of a statement win.
Okay. Darren?
Yeah, I'm going to back Northampton as well. I think Leinster can afford to lose it and regroup and still come back. And I think they'll still come back and win the group.
Okay. And are we both going for Connacht?
Yes, I think so.
I'm going to go for Gloucester. I just think they're on a bad run, but I just think they've too much quality. But I don't know.
Okay, well, that's excellent. Good.
I think that's why you asked me to come on the show, isn't it?
Yeah, you're allowed to say you don't know. It's perfectly fine. Listen, thanks very much, fellas. Big Anglo-Irish weekend always has a kind of certain flavour in the Heineken Champions Cup, so enjoy it. Ben Coles of The Telegraph. Thanks, Ben.
Pleasure. Thank
Cheers.
You.
Cheers. Darren, thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.